this month's coaching call is on your new client onboarding process and ultimately how do we optimize that in a way that it can be orderly and organized and optimal experience for everyone going through the process. And as we saw in the chat, that is not always the case. So what is the new client onboarding process? We all know it is that space between the prospect process when you are creating awareness and interest and giving people the opportunity to make a decision with you, and when they enter the service model, right? That sustainable system that you have using your client service model and surges and value adds and model meetings to deliver that value over time. But there's a transition period. There is a chasm to be gapped where we go from saying yes to being well inside the system. And that is a place that can get messy. As we saw from all those items in the chat, it's the space where you have to spend a lot of personal time and attention and handholding. And what we wanted you to see is that there are some best practices that you can start to employ as you have in other parts of the practice to really elevate not just the structure, but the experience that everyone has, both you, the client, and your team. So that's what we want to highlight today. Adam, do any of these sound familiar to you? Do you ever have a client call you up and ask any of these things?
Well, I think this is the important part, that this is the mistake that I think a lot of advisors can end up making, where they spend so much time focusing on getting the client, right? Attracting the client and bringing them into the firm. And then once the client says yes, and we start bringing on the process, advisors, just by nature of what we do, we're on to the next one. And we keep wanting to make sure that we're growing, right? It's some more.
Yeah, and that's some of the stuff.
Oh, thanks, Garrett. and we certainly, right, we just ask the relationship to commit to our firm and deal with something that is some of, if not the most personal thing that in their life, their money and their future and their dreams and their wealth. And there's a phrase that I've instilled in our firm, and it's something that I learned a long time ago that I think is really powerful, is that resentment and lack of trust can set in the moment communication ends. And I think that is just something really important as you're thinking about the onboarding process, to don't lose touch with the fact that, yes, there are administrative things that need to get done, but it's also important to be empathetic to the client about what's happening and manage and set expectations along the way. Because contrary, like we said in the chat, as much as we want things to go right the first time, sometimes things are beyond our control. And that's where having that candid conversation with the client and managing expectations, I want to instill that in the theme of this conversation with onboarding, to manage client expectations and timeline and be transparent in what to expect next. Don't leave them guessing.
Well, and the thing I want each of you to ask yourself is, imagine that you were the client. You've just sat across from you, right? You've had a series of meetings or phone calls. In those conversations, you have imparted, hopefully, like, trust, credibility. They are believing that this is a good idea. And then what happens after they say yes and walk out of the office? I want you to imagine that you're on their side of the street. What are they thinking? What are they experiencing functionally? What letters, what emails, what communications or lack thereof? What expectations do they have? If you haven't set them, they have. It's much easier to meet expectations if you share them and get agreement on them. But more importantly, the fundamental feeling that comes with being a financial advisor, the thing that you get paid for at the absolute base human level, is trust. It's trust. And I want you to ask yourself, if you are really honest, when your new clients are onboarding, what is the feeling state that they are experiencing? Is it assurance, trust, confidence, or is it not knowing, uncertainty, doubt, maybe even frustration? What is the experience and the feeling that you want them to have at the moment that you kick off the relationship with that first step that says, we're going to start delivering? And the question Adam and I and all of the alumni constantly ask themselves are this: can we always positively answer the most important questions that clients are always asking? Can I count on you? every one of those questions, every challenge, every question about value or the fee is ultimately boiled down to you. Can I count on you to be there in the ways that I expect and value to meet my needs, motivators, and goals? We've given that a name, we've given it processes, we've given it structure and meetings, but in the end, this is the thing that I need to know to continuously write that fee or sign off on it and feel great about it. So we want you to look through the lens of the structure that we're about to go through with that grounding on the feeling state of where clients are and where you want them to be as they go through this process. Adam, you want to walk us through your favorite steps?
I think the biggest takeaway that we've learned as we've continued to refine down the onboarding process are similar lessons that we learned through the prospecting process, in that it is just that, it is a process. It's not a falling off a cliff event. It is a process that happens. And so I think the biggest mistake that we made early on, both on the prospecting side as well as the onboarding side, was just pouring all of the stuff that needs to get done in the onboarding process onto them right away. Okay, welcome aboard as a client. Now, here are the 37,000 different things that we need you to do. Do, right, a task. We don't like tasks. That just we collectively as people don't like another thing on our to-do list. But there are things that need to get done. So what we have found is that by breaking it up into steps and chapters, if you will, of the planning process, that's what has made it an easier pill to swallow for clients coming on board. So the welcome packet, and again, the two tools that I would encourage all of you to utilize that we have found to be extremely beneficial in allowing us to, one of Stephanie's favorite phrases that I've loved has been to scale special. To personalize an automated process or to personalize a systematized process, two tools to use. Number one, your scheduling software. So as you're booking, you're planning meetings with clients, all of the things that we have here, right? The welcome, the implementation, the plan implementation, progress reporting, all of those are going to be meetings or going to be some type of different strategy or a different type of appointment that you could, not saying you have to, that you could set in your appointment software. Calendly, Acuity, use that as the opportunity to communicate your message, set expectations, manage expectations, set timelines. That's one place that you can think about creating and adding just your set of sense of authenticity and compassion to the relationship. And then the other tool that we've used that we've talked about many times has been Text Expander. So for example, the welcome process, we share welcome aboard as a client. We're so happy to welcome you to the Integrated Planning and Wealth Management family of clients. Kathy does all of that. All of that has been systematized inside of Text Expander. The kickoff, we have our onboarding process. Our first step is our go meeting, our get organized meeting. That's where John will walk them through e-money. We call it wealth plan. Start kind of filling in the blanks. That's where also John kind of engages some of that life planning conversation, the Kinder 3 questions. We'll send that to them as a preemptive food for thought. And then we have our up to 4 planning meetings that we have. And I did share a sample of our planning process with the Limitless team. I believe that's in the library somewhere. Lisa, if it's not, can you silently make a note to make sure that that is nested in this lesson where we shared our new client timeline? We send that to the client again. Again, all of this is done through the filter of managing and setting expectations. You're going to hear Stephanie and I say that probably no less than another 10 times just in this one call alone. Because like she had said, what happens when we don't? They will. Or when we don't set expectations, they will. Last thing I'll say before I wrap up my point here, we have also in ActiveCampaign, we have built an automation system, an automation that goes out 1 week. It's 6 emails that goes out once a client agrees to come on board as a client. It's a week after, then a week after that, then a month after that, then a month after that, and then a month after that, and a month after that. So it's 6 times, and I believe that is over a... I might be getting my timeline wrong, but my point is those are specifically generic emails in that they're just another touch. For example, the fourth one says something to the effect of, I know we've been going through a lot. I know this has been a commitment. But we've learned, as with most things in life, if we want something we've never had before, we're going to have to do something we've never done before. And we're just so grateful that you're along for this, or that we're along on this ride with you. Thank you for your continued commitment to the process. It's not timed to anything. It's not like we send that out when they get their paperwork done. It doesn't matter when that goes out. So these are two parallel tracks of communication that just allow us to touch the client in a way that tells them that we see you, we hear you, we empathize with you, and we're there for you.
So as you think about the structure of your process, you're going to have a welcome, right? Which we'll go through in a little bit more depth. The implementation kickoff, where you're really setting those expectations and initiating that first round of work. You're going to start implementing the plan. You will have different models based on my experience. Many of you will do a lot of planning in a very short and concentrated period of time, or do some of that on the front end as part of the prospect process, and then get into that service model more quickly. More and more, we're seeing advisors, we are really extending that out over that first year or that first 6 months, and then integrating them into the service model, depending on whether they're in a 6 or a 12 month schedule. So we're really defining this phase as a bridge between the prospect process and the service model. So you'll want to architect that phase 3 based on how you implement on the actual planning, investment, insurance side, whether it's a contracted period or a longer period. What's really important, irrespective of that, and this is where it tends to break down, it doesn't usually break down on the implementation, certainly not on the asset side, because that's where the economics are coming from. It tends to break down on that expectation management and the experience around what's happening, why it's happening, and what to expect. So there's two things. One, we're not fulfilling on our commitment to, right, be that person and brand that they can count on. And two, we're giving up a huge opportunity to put trust equity in the bank in easy ways. So progress reporting can be some of my favorite. One of our leaders, Kyle, has a weekly email that he sends to everyone. And it's just one email, 3 to 4 minutes, talking about whatever's going on. So he starts that with personal videos in the onboarding process, and then quickly layers them into the firm communication, and people come to feel like they have a deep relationship with him much more quickly, right? Because he's just showing up in that trusted advice way. We have something we call Friday follow-ups. You can pick a day of the week. Friday follow-ups is catchy and people remember it, where every Friday is the day that your team is following up with clients in the onboarding phase and updating them, making sure those next steps are calendared, making sure that you're updated. So it's clients get used to it. Kyle sends his relationship, his advice, right, packaging, right, his commentary, his opinion, if you will, on Sundays at the same time. Friday follow-ups ideally should be, if you want them to kind of create that expectation set and that confidence, it's, you know, every Friday morning or afternoon. You can pick any day of the week. But the idea is to create a system that your team can follow, and if you have the confidence in it, to reveal that to your clients, and it's really confidence inspiring. Adam, as he mentioned, does those monthly communications. Again, depending on how much you're covering with them, you're going to want to look at how tight you make that schedule. Monthly emails should go out certainly to clients, but also to centers of influence. You're going to want to make sure that you're including where it's a referral. Certainly, you're going to use that 5-step process, and where it's not, this is your opportunity to expand your center of influence network, because it should simply be a part of your onboarding process to make those outreaches. You're going to have an email, right? You're going to go through that process. They'll ultimately get on the mailing list. Then you have a bridge to deepening the relationship. So you want to make sure that's structured in there. And then again, if you're extending the process out over a year, you're going to want to make sure you have quarterly implementation check-ins or progress reports with the client. Then you're ultimately going to move them into the service model. So those are the core phases that you're going to follow. So let's spend a little bit of time talking about what are the best practices and how that's being applied in practices like yours. And then you can really think through how you're going to map that out when it comes to your process. And if you've got questions, don't forget to put them in Slido. Lisa will let us know if any drop in. Before we get into some of the samples of how you can execute on the structure, because that's the part that, right, makes it a lot more transparent for all of us, is I want you to think about that structure through the lens of the feeling state that we talk about, the mindset, the stories, what are those thought bubbles that the clients are having in their head as they're engaging in the email or the paperwork or the conversation with someone on your team. So in the beginning stage, we're going to start at anticipation. Like, okay, we can do this, right? We're signing the agreement. We get a welcome kit. If you're not doing it right, it's sort of uncertainty. What happens after this step? Next, you're going to start kicking off implementation, which means you're going to take action. And what we know about when people have things they want to act on or worries, when they take action, there's an element of relief that kicks in, right? So this is the phase where they're like, okay, we're doing something, right? As you do those progress reports, quarterly, weekly, monthly, depending on your schedule, you're creating information. And that helps people, Eli, to know, oh, that's right, we're on track. Hey, Edwin, client's going to see that and be like, absolutely, we're where we're supposed to be. That allows us to move into that comfort and confidence stage. I really am in good hands, right? That staying connected, Andrew, that we know what to expect. You show up consistently and you deliver. There's good, positive communication. The opposite of that is I'm disengaged at this phase. I'm wondering, where did you go and what happened next? Notice how I've gone from uncertain to this worry loop to, hey, what happened to my advisor? And it's just about not just what you're doing, but how we're presenting what we're doing, going back to some of those communications that Adam talked about. Go ahead, Adam.
Oh, as I say, this is again, the common theme in this slide is managing and setting expectations to not leave clients in the dark of what's happening. And the first thing that is on, again, this is something that can be systematized, that can be documented, should be documented in your CRM. All the major CRMs out there can do that. Even if you're not, get it on paper, just get that checklist down. This is what we do. This is when we do it. This is who does it on our team. And this is for which client, and have that systematized process. Another way that you can up-level this process for the client to keep them above the line there. Thank you. This is perfect because this this goes right into what I want to talk about is the personalized. Everything that we see on this is more task management related, but don't underestimate, or I shouldn't say underestimate, don't forget the human side of this equation. So one of the standard things that we do in our firm is because we have clients all over the country, it became difficult for us to think about how we could send welcome gifts to clients. So there is a company in Indiana called The Taste of Indiana. And what they do is they have gift baskets that are made up of all kinds of different gifts, all sourced from Indiana. So for what it's worth, it's a nice little touch. And what we do is, that's again, in workflow, Kathy has it as a step in the onboarding process to email Taste of Indiana with the client's contact information, you know, with their mailing address, et cetera. Taste of Indiana bundles it all together. They ship it out. I can't think of a client that hasn't sent us a, oh my gosh, what a nice gift basket. Thank you so much for doing that. That was amazing. I could not even tell you what's in the gift basket. I just know it's all sourced from Indiana, and it's a touch of Indiana, a taste of Indiana. The other thing that I'll do is, as I'm listening to the prospect and now new client, what are things that they enjoy? What are things that I think they might like? Kathy will have, I'll put that in the workflow, in the onboarding workflow, go to Amazon and send this one little gift, right? It could be a $25 gift. It's that personal, right? Everything that you look on here is more on the quantitative side of the relationship, getting the data, doing the paperwork, finding account numbers, transferring assets. But the qualitative side of that is why clients will stay with you, right? They came to you because of something, because of a problem. And everything that we're doing on this page right here is directly related to solving that problem. But there's such a human element to that as well. And those little things, those little nuances of what you can do to really build trust capital and relationship equity with your clients.
Well, and the reason that Kim was complimenting you on the visuals.
Oh, thank you.
Powerful, because one, do you notice how we took all these disparate steps? Imagine that you're someone who's joining Adam's team and you look at this and in an instant you have a visual impression, a story of what the experience, all these tasks and steps and processes are supposed to go through. So one, it's really valuable. So when you get up with your team and you roadmap the process and the outline, to Adam's point, you're going to do it very similar to this in a functional view. And then, as we've talked about, through the lens of the expectations, are we managing and communicating around the experience and the level of engagement? And you put those two things together, and then you'll have a back office system that's really tight, understanding that different people will go through it different. You'll use your workflows and your your internal systems to chunk that work so that, right, you have a workflow and a process when you're doing the estate planning review, and you have a workflow and a process when you're reviewing the stock compensation or the partnership agreement. Each of those has a workflow. What you're doing is creating a path that strings all of those together for the new client onboarding part of the process. So this is Adam's sort of internal operational functional view. And then ultimately going back to that experience and expectation setting, we want to, in the ideal, create a visual story, a graphic version to help set the client expectation and experience. One,
yes.
It's incredibly valuable to capture it. Two, the reason we are such big fan of visuals is visuals are like stories to your brain, and stories actually activate your brain in several different places. When you see a visual, it's almost impossible not to look, right? You simply can't help it. Your brain wants to take all those pieces, put it together, and figure out the story that it's telling you. When you see a bullet point list, your brain doesn't respond in the same way, which is why, so you can see a version of Adam's here. This is Taylor Schulte's. It has the different elements. So this is on the website. You can see a version here that does a nice version step-by-step that kind of talks about the steps. So this firm is really breaking out each element of planning into a module and approaching it in that way. And you just see a different, more detailed, I think, analytical engineer types on the right with the bullet points. So what our goal is to get really clear on what our backstage process and operational system is, and then package and present that to clients so that we can set an expectation that we have the confidence that we can deliver on. Because as you do that, Andrew, every single time that you say, we'll be reaching out to you later this week, and you do, trust equity in the bank. Nick, when you show them this or something like it, and then you deliver consistent with it, their brain is like, that Nick guy does what he says he can do. We can count on him. And that is the trust equity that you use to manage that engagement and that relationship over time. And we all know there are going to be times when you need to draw on that trust equity. So the goal here is to take and create a visual expectation. And then the idea is you engage in the process. So these are the steps that we talked through just a little bit earlier. We are huge fans of sending a welcome kit. What happens anytime you get a welcome kit? Let's be honest, you get a box of any kind or a gift. What's the first thing that you do?
I got something. I got mail. There was a whole movie made on that. Right? You got mail.
Dopamine hit, right? Two, who is it from? Three, recognition, valid. Like there's a lot of right gratitude, all that good stuff. And the idea here is you want to make an impression that says, this is important and you matter. We're paying attention. This is personal. So Adam's choice of Indiana is really clever because his clients are everywhere. But what he's saying is, we want you to just get a taste and a feel for us here in Indiana. It's also really, it's very standardized, so it's very easy to execute. So you want to have a meet the team. You want to share what we call client engagement standards. And I'll show you some examples of that. A client engagement standard, I think Tracy Beckus was the first person to bring the concept broadly to the space, I think when I was like in my early 20s, this idea of a service menu, I think we'd seen it in a vet's office or something, but this idea of setting expectations is the surest way to be able to meet and exceed them. If you do not set expectation, everyone else in their brain will 100% guaranteed do it for you. And then you're calculating with math that you don't know. So go ahead, Adam.
It's a big differentiator because you know what? Nobody else is doing it. And the idea, it shows put all of this through the filter of the UX and the UI, right? The user experience and the user interface. We know as advisors that the technology side of the advice of financial services, pardon my language here, but I think we all kind of collectively agree that the best word to describe it is that it's cumbersome and that it sucks. And that we know that we're going to be subjecting clients to this, unfortunately, because the big behemoths that we partnered with, to name names, but let's face it, there are clunks in the system. It's still an antiquated process. Insurance, estate, like, it's not fun. It's aligning action with intention. But my point with that is, by setting expectations and letting them know, not only this is what you can expect from us, but this is what we expect from you, it drives the commitment of the relationship to the next level. It doesn't leave ambiguity. It doesn't leave the unknown of, so how do I reach out to you if I have questions? Who's the best person to call? No, if you have questions, this is the number to call. This is the email address to use. This is how we prioritize.
I'm going to pause Adam right there. And I want you, right, circle of trust, honest moment. Everyone drop in the chat when you think about the last person that you onboarded, someone you're working with now, or the last person if not in the moment. When they left, when you think about what we've discussed, what was the expectation that, did you set a clear expectation? I'm looking for yeses or noes here.
I was going to say we're ghosting. There we go. There another
one. In writing, yes, and it's working well. No, not really. General, I thought I did, but I could do better. Nope, no, right. So we all know this, but it's really important to acknowledge it for your brain to just say, okay, I've identified a gap. There's an opportunity. Now what I'm going to ask myself is, what do I need to account for, right? So you've got an overview of the strategy, right? Engagement and expectations together create a better experience, right? We're trying to solve for trust, equity, and the can I count on you question. Structure, we've talked about, right? The components of it. Now, as we go through them, it's around how are you going to think through how you apply this in your office? So we're going to break down each of the steps. I'd say there's some, Lisa said there's some questions, so we'll start taking those, but we want you to think through this through the lens now as how will this influence, impact, or change what I'm doing? It does not have to be immediately, by the way. If you are working on other priorities, you can take these notes, set them aside, look at them when you next prioritize, and this lesson will all be here for you when you're ready. So with that, I want you to think about the expectation that you did set. And now what I want you to write down on the piece of paper in front of you is, what is the expectation that you would like to set? And how are you going to set it? Is it on your website? Is it a visual? Is it a bullet list? Is it a conversation? I just want you to capture something. And then we're going to talk through each of the steps, and then we can take questions or chat with some of you around how you might implement this and what questions you might have.
Love Eli's response here, that there is a process and I'll follow it. Nothing can leave that can kind of shake the foundation of trust and commitment in then the unknown, right? Like, so what's going to happen next? Like, please, if there's one action that you take from this, it's to do and make sure that the next relationship that you bring on, that even if you're aviation conference, right, or even if you're building the airplane as you fly, and it's going to change, right? The on the previous slide, that new client onboarding process was my old version. The link that Allison put in chat, that is the current one that we're using. We've used that one for, you know, 1.5-2 years now, and it's worked great. But that doesn't mean that we're not thinking about ways that we can tweak it. That is letting clients know when they can hear from you, frequency, and on what. That is what I would consider to be the MVP that we would want you to walk away from this conversation with.
So imagine that you have a piggy bank, and on the side of that piggy bank in your mind, I want you to write trust equity. It can be big purple letters. It can have sequins. It can be calligraphy. It can be a metal stamp. You create your own piggy bank of trust equity. When clients are nervous, when they have questions about fees, when the markets drop, when they have objections or challenges, and you show up, their brain is asking itself, can I count on you? And it's going to its log, Felicity, and it's checking those trust equity deposits. And it is saying, what's the probability that I can count on Felicity to deliver in the way that she says I can count on her? And if you have put in those trust deposits, then their brain will say, okay, again, if there's alignment around values and story. If you haven't, you have to work harder. You get 3 phone calls. They don't have the confidence that you want to instill in them. So step one, that's not all going to happen in the welcome packet. But you know what is going to happen in the welcome packet? You're going to make a distinct impression that you are different, that you are professional, and that you deliver. That's the goal. So you can deliver a gift. We always deliver it at Quantivus. You guys get a welcome packet from us. It's assembled in a from a couple of places. Well, I would love to, right? The figuring always that, like, how much am I willing to spend to put it all in one box? Like, that's like, it's like twice as much. That just doesn't make economic sense, right? But you're always looking at things through the lens of, how can I set this relationship up for success? We send you that calendar because we want you to know when you kick off that this is like an anchor to the work that we're going to do together. Because what I know is that calendar is the bridge between what's in your head and what's in your life. And if it doesn't show up there, if we can't teach you that, then everything else is harder. Like, that's an anchor concept. So the idea is, what do you want to anchor with your new clients in the beginning? So you can be functional, but you can also be feeling. Like, we have clients all the time that put things in there like, we don't predict the markets, but we're great planners and problem solving partners. So we're going to be here to do those things when we need to. You, again, you don't have to use that example language, but the goal is, if the authentic you were to show up and put something in a packet that said, here's what we want you to know about working with us in a way that's going to set us both up for success, what would you put in the packet? Do you guys remember? I should have, Lisa, we got to note this for next year. We need a big Jerry Maguire slide here. Anybody
help
know
me, help you.
Jerry Maguire? It's the manifesto. We need to call this the client manifesto. This is what you're saying. Here's what you can expect from us. And it's awesome sauce. And by the way, in order for this partnership to work, we're going to need some things from you. You're going to have to show up on time. You're going to have to give us paperwork. You're going to have to share a value system. You're going to have to be a good human. Whatever you want, this is your space to create that shared story. Don't do them or you a disservice by leaving anything out that might be important.
Involve your team in this process as well. If this is new to you and you haven't and you don't have this, you know, officially outlined on any type of document, involve your team. And ask them the language on how they would communicate, because their vantage point in what they do for clients and what they're like, what they're doing for clients and when they're doing it in the relationship can some, I don't want to say it influences it, but it's always nice to have another perspective. This is also a great conversation as you're thinking about wordsmithing this. If you're in masterminds, these are phenomenal. Your mastermind can be a phenomenal sounding board for you as you're thinking about it, because the other individuals in your mastermind can not only think of it from an advisor's perspective, but they can put themselves and kind of put on that avatar hat of being a client as well.
Yep. And feel free to share them on Tribe. These examples are also in the library. Tanya, like me, loves to brand things. So, right, the goal ultimately is to take this, turn it into client-facing deliverables, the overview of the process, the engagement standards. It's a very productive and positive presentation because, again, as Adam pointed it out, it really sets you apart and it's a very nominal expense. So you want to use these to set a clear and common language. You want to set the expectation so that you can deliver on it. If there are any issues, Melissa, and the prospect says or the new client says, hey, I have a problem with this, that's a good thing. This should surface any potential breakdowns on those anchor concepts, how we service, how we deal with problems, right? When we meet, what to expect from our staff, how we're going to treat each other, our philosophies around things. So we have clients where this is a simple one page, and I have clients where this is a booklet that the client has to sign off on. Tanya is the client also actually signs because we want the client to actually commit to having read it. And when you ask someone to sign something, it creates an entirely different level of awareness and presence.
It creates an ownership to it. It says that this isn't something, this isn't a piece of marketing collateral. This isn't just something, a fluffy piece of another fluffy document. Is it a legally binding contract? Well, no, of course not. And you're not positioning it to the client that it is, but it is it's a commitment to the relationship.
It's far funner than your typical ADV. Let's go with that. Far, far funner.
Paul asks a question. Before Paul's question gets pushed up there, because this is kind of along the engagement standards and when a client at that point in the process, does anybody do a welcome video? We don't. The closest thing that I'll speak for me, what we do at our firm is part of our Say Yes Prospect process that we tweaked is at the end, well, we didn't tweak it, but we tweaked how we set it up, was at the end of the plan presentation, we set the plan presentation follow-up. And that is when we ask the client, that's when I basically, that's the close, right? And so in that call, when a client says yes, that is essentially the video of me welcoming them to the firm. In that call, I will let them know, here's the next step. Here's when you will hear from our team and who's who you'll hear from, which is always Kathy. And then letting them know that their next appointment is going to be with John, and essentially handing them off to John, because I don't take on client relationships personally anymore. So I'm managing and setting those expectations. But that's not an asynchronous communication. That's not a Loom video or a BombBomb video or anything like that. But that's not the same. And the other reason, we have enough other touch points between now and the next meeting that a video, I don't think, does that, or we don't need to do that. But there is certainly nothing wrong with hitting record on a Loom video and doing a 30-second, Paul, thank you so much for your commitment to our firm. We are so excited and thrilled to begin partnering with you as we work to align your money with your life's purpose, or whatever your value prop is.
Yeah, we are big fans of welcome videos because, again, they're brief, they're personal, right? So it really creates a warm and inviting tone to begin with. And as Adam pointed out, you don't always have to be the one doing them. So we love stories about the firm as a part of the brand, which someone should have seen earlier, but it's always nice to have someone show up, reinforce that brand promise, and show up as the guide to help them through it. Again, whether that's you or someone else. So what's that next step in the process, when that really is where you end up in implementation kickoff? So this is where you're going to define and share your implementation process. So if you go back, if you're reviewing this to those slides that we were on in a little earlier, where we're then breaking down the financial planning piece of the process, we're looking first at your, right, your investments, then we're looking at this, then we're looking. So they're making it modular. So that this, if we're being honest, big, ambiguous, Charlie Brown's mom, squishy around the edges process that you all know, when we as clients walk in, we're like, okay, I signed something, what happens now? And there's all these pieces and moving parts, and most people don't know, is that happen quick? Is that gonna happen over a long period of time? Are they going to be meeting with you every week for the next month? Are they not going to see you for a year? So what we want to do is really define and lay it down that process. And then, as Adam pointed out, use our tech tools and those, the process that we've shared to them, to map that whole thing out, right? So that's where you're going to decide what your structure is, and then put that structure in place in your technology.
One other thing that I've internalized, and this may or may not be true, this is just my BS, right? This is my belief structure, just in the way, and I'm also saying this from the position of how I would think as a client. We charge a financial planning fee, right? And it's not an insignificant financial planning fee as well. To become a client, it's a $2,500 onboarding fee right away. And so it's different than an AUM fee structure where we're transferring assets, in that we're debiting someone's checking account or charging their credit card. So if I put myself in the client's shoes, I just gave an advisory firm $2,500 on my credit card or out of my checking account. There is a very tangible feel to that dollar and to the exchange. And so again, my own BS, my putting myself in the client's perspective, I made the commitment. I wanted us as a firm to make the commitment to essentially not really over communicate, but certainly not leave them in the dark. Hey, thanks for the $2,500. And then crickets. And so if you're charging a financial planning fee, take that maybe just into consideration and think of, put yourself in the client's perspective. You just collected X dollars in financial planning fee. Make sure that you're letting them know what the next step is. And again, Kathy, that's all systematized through Text Expander. That is all Kathy's sandbox there. And go back to this presentation and look, I think it was five or six slides back, that behind the scenes timeline, that first part, Kathy's, there's four or five bullet points. Kathy is very, very transparent with client. Yes, right here. Let's see, maybe it's the create the doc. Yeah, everything is in create. So the top there, after step two, create email with scheduling links, send email, send doc, send, like all of that. She is over communicating, dare I say, with the client in that beginning process, because we want them to know we are committed to you. Thank you for your commitment to us. Here's how we're committed to you. That was it. I was done. So.
So to Adam's point, things like account openings and transfers, right? I want you to think about, does anybody remember what buying a house used to be like, the amount of paperwork, right? The pages and pages and pages and pages. And now we just get to DocuSign. It was like the best thing ever, right? Click and point, click and point, click and point. Like, oh, that was a game changer. I mean, so where, again, barring changing custodians, not that there are not some cool new entrants into the space that we're not fans of, but to Adam's point, there's just a lot of archaic structure in some of those systems. So the goal is to look at everything through the lens of how do you make it easy, effective, and enjoyable for the client and for you. Are you DocuSigning? Are you sending things in a FedEx envelope with clear instructions with an envelope back? Like, where are those places? I have clients who literally have someone get on the phone and walk through the boring stuff with clients. We're going to get on the phone. Now they have to do it on the phone, obviously, with a lot of people. But they used to have clients, right? As you look at those processes, we'd have clients come in at a 30-day point with all their paperwork, and we'd go through it and we'd organize it for them. Now we can do all of that electronically. But the idea is looking at your clients, looking at your staff and team capacity, like what do you have the capacity to do to curate a better experience for your clients? And then as Adam's shown you, what can you do to curate a very defined structure, an operational system for your team and yourself so that you can get through the messy middle, if we're being honest, that's what it is, as quickly as possible.
Kathy will do that with clients, especially if it's a practice owner, because everybody's time is valuable, right? But theirs is, dare I say, extra valuable, right? Just there's no shortage of things on their to-do list. So measure twice, cut once. We definitely want to get it right the first time. Case in point, when you're asking clients to fill in their bank account information on DocuSign, this has been a frustration that Kathy has gone through. We've learned this lesson once or twice. And so now again, my philosophy as a QA engineer in a previous life was, what's the root cause of this here? What is happening? If a client opens up a traditional IRA for backdoor Roth, we have had clients, unfortunately, put their business checking account information in the DocuSign envelope. You don't want to put business checking information in a personal account. So now it's a NIGO, right, Nick? And now Kathy has to go back to the client again, and it has to be another DocuSign envelope. It's inconvenient at best for everybody. And so when there are those things, as your team goes through the account opening process, if there is any room for interpretation, right? Your social is your social. Driver's license is your driver's license, right? You can create those fields in DocuSign to have the client fill that in. But if there's anything that's open for interpretation, spell those out in the email. Create it, or do what Kathy will do sometimes on Next Level Up. Have that conversation with the client and walk them through that. Create systems and create stop gaps to ensure that you're leaving as much ambiguity out of the process as possible. I know that's easy for me to say in a webinar right here, or a webinar, Zoom call, whatever. But I implore you to make sure to go through your process with a fine tooth comb and try and remove ambiguity as much as possible.
We have a private client we did a piece for where it's literally so graphic, because again, people tend to be able to follow images and stories. It has a picture of every platform, their login for the platform, what's in that platform. And this is the part I felt really good about. It has a picture of the team member in charge of that, like who's the contact person if they have problems with that platform, because they're big enough to have multiple people in multiple platforms. And it's part of their client engagement standards. And it's part of that 30-day check-in where it's like, here's the stuff that you're gonna use. If you can get someone's hands on technology, they're much more likely to use it. If you say log in, it will sit on the corner of their desk forever. If someone on your team says, we're going to do that welcome check-in and I want to walk you through the paperwork and the platforms that you're going to be using, it's really boring, but we want to make it as easy as possible as we can for you. Now we just have people doing a lot of that in welcome videos. But again, just depending on the size and nature of your firm, it's about how deep you can go with that personal experience. So my point there is, don't underestimate what you can put on a piece of paper, throw a pretty picture around and give some guidance around that lets people know what's happening. We're like, hey, in the first 30 days, like in the old days, we used to get people a box and just tell them, put everything in this box and just bring it in your 30-day meeting. We're going to organize it for you and we're going to tell you, like, now it's all electronic. But
Steph, can I share my screen real quick? I'll show what we share with our clients. This is our version of the resource guide. I love the idea of tying the picture to to who on the team would be responsible for doing it. So this is the online client resource guide that we send as part of our onboarding process to clients. Again, something that we, in partnership with our graphics designer, help them create. Again, we'll always be here to get, like, we're just seeding every opportunity of communication is seeding with the client, who you are, what you do for them, and why they're partnering with you. But just in case, right? And then so down here below, we've given basically the four different tools that we use. And I loathe the fact that we have to create this. Why we can't have one centralized location for all of their financial life, it frustrates me. So I do the best I can with what I have, even though I know what we have isn't the best. And this is the next best thing. So we send this to them, and these are fillable fields down here. So the client can type in their username. They can type in their password. We have a whole email that goes out that says, here's what you can do, print it off, save it, do it. This is a savable PDF. And so this is something that we can, I'll send this to Allison. She can put this in the library if people want to use it as a benchmark.
Great. So that said, does it come back to me automatically? Do I have to do something?
You have to reshare.
All right.
Sorry.
No worries. I can do this.
Hey, look at that.
Yep. So again, just more examples of how it is the great unknown. And we literally take a client on, same thing with centers of influence, by the way. This is the biggest breakdown in building center of influence relationships. Two things. One, you show up, you tell them a bunch of great stuff, and then you disappear on them and wonder why they don't send referrals much of the time, separate conversation. But if someone actually gets to the point where they invoke the greatest act of trust that they can invoke on your behalf, which is sending one of their valued clients to you, what I can tell you is that about 89% of the time, the response is a dark curtain and a thank you note or email in this case, and nothing else. And so I want you to think about what the opportunity gap there is between thanks for the referral and let me make you a trusted team member and part of the process. So when a client comes on and they have an advice team around them, right, their attorneys, their insurance, right, their other advisors, this is an opportunity to reach out and make those connections. So very much like Adam talked about, and what you're seeing in his practice is all of these concepts have gone from best practice to in practice, back to best practice, because now they're showing up in this nice presentation form. So when that center of influence outreach is made, imagine that you're then sending a packet that says, welcome to the firm, right? As a trusted partner, you're a partner of one of our clients, which makes you a partner of us. This is how our firm operates. There's your new client package to the center of influence, explaining your new client process. It includes center of influence outreach. It has all your awesome deliverables and all this cool stuff. And it says, we'd love to schedule a time to connect with you to learn a little bit more about your history with the client, any issues that you might be aware of that might be of benefit to them in our relationship. And we'd love to get to know you, blah, blah, blah. Is that going to go bad, Andrew? Never. Angela, is that comfortable? Not only should it be a comfortable way to reach out, it should be a kick-ass confident way to reach out. You should be like, oh my gosh, look at me. Nobody's doing these things. So as you build the client onboarding process, the invitation is to translate that just into some COI pieces, minor changes, if any, and make sure that that's a part of your process. And then as the client is going through onboarding, that you have an onboarding, that you have a process you're taking their centers of influence through. It doesn't have to be a weekly update. Is it a monthly update for the first quarter? Is it a quarterly update? Is it an, like, what is it that's going to demonstrate to that center of influence that you really are different and that you deliver? Because if they believe that you're different and that you deliver, they will, if you are a fit relative to their clients and who you're focusing on, you'll get more clients from them. So don't forget about the centers of influence in the onboarding process. They tend to get set to the side, and there's just a lot of opportunities sitting on the sidelines. All right, I want to pause here. I see some questions. Teresa, I saw a question in Slido. Oops, sorry about that. We'll get to the others in a moment. I'm trying to stay on topic to the regular ones here. Right. What do you guys think? Andrew, as you think about this, what's one change that you could think to make to your onboarding process to make it easier, more effective, or more enjoyable for clients?
Well, I'm a big believer in mail and receiving something in the mail. People love that. So a welcome package is not something that I've done in the past. And this is causing me to rethink that. And gift, I'm not sure. I don't know if Indiana resonates with me, but something I think makes sense. And the COI thing resonates with me as well. That's a very good reason to do this.
Well, it's certainly confidence inspiring. When you can tell people what to expect from you, it suggests that you're proactive, professional, and that you're going to deliver it, because 90% of the time they get the great unknown. So the more that we can set expectations, the more that we're in a position to set everyone up for success. So some good takeaways there. Jamie, what about you? What's something that you might change as a result of what you've heard so far, or any questions?
Thank you. The aspect that I could pick up and put in place is actually creating a workflow that is better than the one we have and incorporates a bunch of the things that I've just heard.
For those of you who are thinking of sitting down with the team and creating a workflow, anyone going to do that over the next week or month or so? Right. What's your process? Where'd she go? What's your process going to be? Where'd she go? Felicity, there you are. As you think about sitting, like, how are you going to present this to your team and what are you going to map out with them?
Well, I think our first thing is to actually note down what we're doing at the moment, then what we'd like it to look like, and then try and fill that gap at the moment in the middle. We don't really have a process at all. We lose more clients in the onboarding process than we do anywhere else.
Okay.
Wow. You said you lose clients in the onboarding process?
We lose clients in the onboarding process.
So one, no judgment there, because you're obviously, right, a quality person trying to do quality work. So that tells us that there's a process breakdown, a people breakdown, or a platform breakdown, or some combination of all of those three. And so, Felicity, everything that we've shared will 100% solve for that, because mm-hmm. the real issue is that the trust is breaking down really rapidly. Like, somewhere between we really like you and think you can help, it's never mind, these guys aren't delivering. So to your point, when there's breakdowns, it's not a bad thing. It's a good thing in that contrast tells us that there's something that we need to be tended to. So for Felicity or any of you, even if it's not that extreme, it's a phenomenal opportunity to go back and do one of those breakdown briefs you hear us talking about. Get on the whiteboard with the team, no blame, no judgment, just, if we're clients, what are we thinking? What's the behavior we're experiencing? What's going on? What's working? What's not working? Identify those breakdowns, Felicity, so that you can surface with the team how to solve for them. Like, what are the most pressing breakdowns? Is it setting expectations? If you're overwhelmed and you've gotten overcommitted, it's okay to say, you know, there's been a huge increase in the number of people reaching out to us for financial planning, because quite honestly, I think COVID made everyone realize that they really want to align their money with their life. And we want to make sure that we put everyone through a thoughtful, intelligent process. And as a result, right, this is going to take the next 6 months, but here's the process. Or like Adam's done, you can put a waiting list in place. So those are any pipeline that distributes water, energy, or anything, it has a regulator valve. And if we're putting too much through the pipeline in terms of what it can handle, then you're going to have those breakdowns.
Do the time study with your team as well. This is something that we learned. And again, a high quality problem that needed to be solved in our firm, but we ended up bringing on too many relationships all at once. So we had to do a time study with John and with Kathy to realize what the time commitment for each of them respectively was in the process and how that mixed into the other daily tasks that they have for existing clients, right? Because I know we're all about compartmentalizing and doing deep work and surges and reviews and things like that, but that doesn't mean that life doesn't happen for our clients in between normally scheduled surge. And so what we ended up doing is, and we certainly never want to compromise the service to existing clients because we're focused on onboarding, just like you don't want to compromise onboarding because you're focused on the prospecting side. All of those have to be compartmentalized and understanding the time commitment for each one of them, but also understanding the influence that it has on the other sections of your practice, right? You don't want to cannibalize one section for the other. And so understand in your firm, what is that, to Stephanie's point, you can throttle, you can govern how many relationships you can bring on given the timeline that you have. And that's where, again, utilizing a CRM, utilizing some type of timeline-based process of saying, I would say probably, I don't want to say a half, I bet a third of prospects ask. And this is something that as I'm coaching and sharing this with all you right now, that I should probably do a better job of clarifying up front with existing relationships that are considering working with our firm. How long does this process take? They will ask that, is this a 3-month process? Is this a 6-month process? Like, we give the timeline. We have our new client onboarding process that, again, Allison put the link there in chat so you can scroll up and pick that process. But notice that there's no dates on that. It says, I think in fine print there, actually, it does say the date there. Or it does say the timeline, if my memory serves me right, because you think I know my exact process, but understand your capacity. That's the lesson there. Understand the capacity of your firm. Yeah, and there's no shame in telling people that.
Bringing on more people than you can into the pipeline than you can push out. So things that you're going to need, Felicity, that you can all do as you map this out is, one, you need a track. This is not going to be Carl Aska, guys. I'm on my iPad set up. This is Steffi drawing, right? So you need the track to write. So imagine Adam's drawing, right? You have the track. That track is your system. Then you're going to have the steps in that process. You might have weekly check-ins in between. And then to your point, Felicity, what are those breakdowns? Like, what is all the stuff that needs to happen under each step and who needs to do that stuff? That's where those workflows really are valuable, right? Each of the communications, each of the workflows themselves, the follow-up can all be embedded there. But step one is to map that out with the team. And then the last part of that, to Adam's point, is to lay out the timeline for that. To our earlier discussion, is that a 12-month process? Is that a 90-day process? So that you can manage the client expectations around what happens, when it happens, who it happens with, and how it happens. We're going to get together in 30 days. We're going to get together and, you know, it's okay to say, hey, the next, you know, 45 to 60 days are going to be really quiet. Companies are super backed up preparing paperwork right now. I'll be honest, half the time we get it, it's not right. We're going to spend time double checking it. So, you know, so what is the expectation that you want to set, and simply set it. So Felicity, does that help in terms of going back and syncing up with the team about the next steps that you can take?
Yeah, it really does. And I think one of our problems is we just set too high an expectation. And clients want it fixed now, and they don't get that. It takes 90 days. It takes forever to get all of this.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And so just set that you say, hey, you know, the first 90 days are going to be the most intense, right? But they also require the most focus. So we're going to need this, this, and this from you, right? After that, each quarter, we're going to be picking one thing. Or what I like to do for each client, and again, depending on your firm client size, right? That's not necessarily for every client, is you can map out the visual of that process for the client. Right? I don't know if Christy's on the call, but she was working on a visual for her one-page plan so that as she actually went through the plan with the client over time, right, each component of that visual starts to get filled out. And that's a very powerful tool in terms of showing clients progress and completion over time of that upfront work, if that's something that you can get to. Andrew, are you high-fiving that, or you have a question?
No, that's, I wanted to follow on what Felicity was saying, because actually I'm worried right now that I might be losing a good client in the onboarding process. And he's a 39-year-old C-suite executive, which is not typical of my clients, but he was referred by another atypical client, a C-suite executive. And it's been a month now, and I don't have the paperwork back. And okay, mea culpa, I'm embarrassed to admit, I've never used DocuSign. Most of my clients are retirees over 50, and that's certainly my niche. Well, it's more niche-y than that, but anyway. So I'm worried. Well, please, let's have a come to Jesus moment here. Am I in the dark ages for not using DocuSign?
Yes.
Because I feel like I'm losing. Okay,
yes,
everybody's nodding.
Yes, right. Yes,
I
yes.
Had to I had two sticks together right now. I would be rubbing them together to start a fire. And that would be my example.
Brutal. It's like, brutal.
Like, don't do it, man.
As someone that is going to be turning 40 in a month and a half, I would leave you.
I'm sorry, you would what?
I would leave you. I would, if you sent me paperwork, no.
Yeah.
I know there's another advisor out there that can make my life easier, especially a C-suite individual. like, I don't mean to throw shade and be very harsh. I'm just, this is a safe space and we can be brutally honest and authentic.
My vulnerability here.
Yeah. There's a BS system there in your mindset of that just because my clients are over 50, that I can stay rutted in my old ways of doing paper because it's what I know and it's what I'm familiar with.
I hear you. And I guess one of the problems is that I'm an RIA. I've got my own RIA. So I know you're going to tell me this is not a problem. I've got my own documents and I've got my TD Ameritrade documents.
Yep.
That's not all a problem, is it?
Nope. All of our documents are loaded in LaserApp. We feed LaserApp. Again, I know, don't ask me how to do this. I know we've done it. The combination of LaserApp and DocuSign make it, we have all of our AIMS, all of our advisory agreements, our financial plan engagement, all of that can be populated in DocuSign.
Okay, I see in the chat now people are piling on. I don't believe for a minute that the typical 93-year-old client wants to use DocuSign. I'm sorry.
Well,
maybe okay, she's so progressive.
Let's not manage to the exception there. 93 might be the exception, but in this might be the extreme version of it, but nobody wanted the iPhone, but Steve Jobs made the iPhone. Nobody wanted the Model T, but Henry Ford created the Model T. Because I'm not saying that we're all visionaries here in creating something that doesn't exist anymore, but I think it's, dare I say, dangerous as the business of advice and financial products, so to speak, continue to be commoditized, that the user experience and user interface, the UI and UX, matters more and more with every month and year that goes on. And this is it going to be something to change? Yes, Andrew, it's going to be something that needs to be addressed. It's going to be something that's going to require change and a little bit of heavy lift on your end in the beginning, but it will be worth it.
I hear you.
Well, and if you are using paperwork, one, you can make that shift, certainly. Two, if you are still using paper, the underlying problem here is lack of action at this point, which is, okay, now this guy's not returning my paperwork, which is, in my experience, one of the places that the whole process falls down because we're not getting that paperwork back.
How did you send the paperwork to him, Andrew?
In the mail.
With a returned envelope?
Yes.
With tracking?
Nope.
Okay. So the next best thing that you can do, if you do have anything that needs to get signed, if a client is signing something that has that much, that a paperwork can have account numbers, socials, driver's license, statements, possibly, a return envelope is great. Make sure that it's priority mail and or FedEx.
Here's the deal. They went to California for a month because it's ridiculously hot in Las Vegas right now.
Sure.
So
what's your team look like, Andrew?
You're looking at it.
Okay, so there's another I don't want to dive too deep down rabbit hole here into it.
Andrew, let me give you just a quick bit of advice that has been helpful when working with high net worth, high motivated people, right? Type A, go, right? Executives, etc. Always schedule a next step. Because this is always the stuff that's important, not urgent. It goes on the side of the desk and it doesn't mean that I don't want to do it. It just means I'm going to get around to that. And you want to have that conversation. So I sat down with the client once. Their average client was about $200 million. And the biggest problem they had was that the sales, the whole process took like forever, as you can imagine. And so one of the changes that we made, it works with all clients, regardless of size, is we simply set the expectation. As we get started, there's going to be right over the next 90 days, there's going to be a certain amount of rate that you're going to get, expectation. I'm going to send a packet of forms to you. They're going to come with a return envelope. You're going to need to go through and sign them. Oftentimes clients will have questions. There may be things that we need to follow up on. So can we schedule a meeting, 15 minutes, a quick call 15 minutes a week from now to make sure that you've gotten them, see if you have any questions and make it easy for you to put them in the envelope and send them back. Would that be okay? If you do that, 9 times out of 10, 99 times out of 100, the person will say, sure. In which case, as much as possible, right, you pull out the calendar and you say, great, right, does this same time next week work? And you try and get literally just a 15-minute call on the calendar to move things forward. Right. If they say no, say, great, I'll follow up in a week if I haven't gotten the paperwork back. Just want to make sure you have answers to any questions you have and make sure we can move this process forward. I know it's important, and I know that this is one of the things that tends to get set aside. So we're going to be following up with you every single Friday to make sure that we've either got the paperwork, can answer your questions, or can be working on whatever's next. Does that sound good with you? Yes. Now, it's a little harder, Andrew, to go back now and say, hey, I'm going to call you every Friday until I get this back. But I understand that you can go back to him, insert that message. They're also out of town and they're busy. It's okay to call and say, hey, I know this is important to you. I sent out the paperwork because I wanted to make sure that we got things moving. I also know that you're out of town, that you're enjoying California right now. Do you want me to follow up, you know, follow up now? Or do you want to follow up when you get back? I'd love to just get a quick time on the calendar so I can answer any questions and follow up on our next steps. The team and I are ready to get moving when you are. Right.
Yeah.
Try to bring him back into the fold, and they might just be out for the summer. That does tend to happen.
He did respond, we texted, and I said just send the documents when you get back to town first week of August.
Okay.
But I got to get into the 21st century here. I know that.
That's right. So one, notice that Andrew could adjust. You all can set good expectations. If you want to make sure that you keep the process moving along, just keep setting calls or steps in the process, particularly on the paperwork side if you're doing it that way. All right, does that help, Andrew?
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome. All right, so plan implementation, we've talked a bit about this in terms of how you're going to approach the work, or do you have a laundry list of work that you're getting through in a really intense 3 or 4 month period? Are you breaking it out into projects module by module? And that's going to depend very largely on your firm, the size of your staff, the types of clients that you have, and your personal approach. But what's important here is that, no different than in the service model, you have the steps and the structure put in place for each of those steps, reviewing the insurance, looking at the estate planning, right? Looking at their practice documents as part of Adam's process. There are workflows for each of those. So going back to Felicity's, you know, mapping out the process with the team, once you're clear on breakdowns in the process, you can map out what that track looks like, when you want those things to happen. And once you get that mapped out and all of the client-facing pieces ready, very much as Adam's done, what is it now, 80 workflows, Adam? Like, you start to build those workflows for each of the modules. When we do tax planning, here's the checklist. Then it goes into the CRM and a workflow, so that literally gets to the point where when Kathy knows that the client, what's come next is that button gets clicked, and that's the work stream that gets done. When that work stream's done, right, or the next one gets clicked. So this is taking all the stuff that gets dropped into this messy middle and organizing it into boxes. What are the boxes? We gather client paperwork. We, right, need this information. We do estate planning. We do insurance. Right. So what are all those pieces that you can map onto that track? Those are the steps. And then when you sit with yourself or your teams, it's defining what are the actions and steps, right? Who does what, when, and how is each of those functions. So plan implementation is the meeting, the communication with the client. It's the behind the scenes work that you're actually doing. And it's the center of influence in the relationship that you're developing there. As we've talked about, step four is, along the way, you're going to be doing progress reviews. I'm a fan of weekly emails. Again, not into perpetuity unless it's part of your video communication, right? But hey, this week, we just wanted to reach out and let you know that your account transfers are on track. Emails are great. One of my favorite tools these days are videos. So again, video has the ability to deepen that relationship in a more personal way than an email. You get tone, you get style, you get inflection, you get feeling. So if you can simply, even if you're not on video, if you've got the image of you, video is great. Open your Loom and say, hey, it's Andrew, I just, right? Or it's Jane, Julie's assistant, I just wanted to, right? It's Friday, follow-up Friday here at the firm. And I just wanted to reach out and let you know that your account transfers are on track. You should be getting some paperwork in your inbox. Go ahead and ignore that. We'd love to schedule your next meeting to go over your accounts. That's that 90-day meeting that we talked about to help you navigate the resources. Would that be okay? There's a Calendly link in the email that this video's in. Please click it so we can get some time on calendar. As always, please feel free to call us if we can answer any questions for you. If I get a little one of those, hey, it's Jane from Julie's office. Just want to let you know, no big news or updates this week. Everything's on track here. If you get any paperwork you have questions about, just please give us a holler. We'll be happy to help you with it. unless I hear from you, right? Unless something comes up before then, I'll be in touch next Friday. If I get that phone call or that video or that email every Friday, now imagine that someone's face, imagine that it is Julie's assistant. Am I going to feel connected and close to her? Am I going to feel more comfortable reaching out to her instead of Julie to get my stuff done? I am, because she's shown up in my inbox and said, I'm here and I'm helpful. And I.
Oops, Steph, did you go mute or did I lose?
She went mute. Oh.
She's on a roll.
Did I miss something?
No, you somehow we lost your audio for about 20 seconds.
Oh, it was the best stuff you're going to get all day. I can't even repeat
it. I'm sure it probably was.
All right. So we just talked about, you really want to use that opportunity to really set those expectations. It's really powerful to communicate on a regular basis. Monthly is very effective as well, but it doesn't understand, right? 3 or 4 weeks goes by, things have been happening. So I really have moved to being a big fan of some kind of weekly communication. We call it follow-up Fridays, because that just really keeps them really engaged for that first 90 days. And then we can ease off the gas as we need to. Again, what's most important here is not that you implement 100% of the best practices and the variations that we're showing you. It's that you get clear on what your MVP, your minimum viable product or base standard is. What's a bar that you can set and stick to and meet with an answer that I can count on you. You can always expand it after that. But if you have, don't say that you're gonna follow up every Friday and not follow up every Friday, because that is the anti-trust equity. That basically says you cannot count on me to do what I say I'm gonna do. So it's better to under-promise and over-deliver here. So as you go out and you think about mapping this, just imagine that you're the client. Remember, I believe that you can say anything if you show up with authenticity and integrity and you frame it in a way that they can hear. It's totally okay. I have sat across from real humans and said, Murphy's Law says that as soon as we transfer this money, the markets are going to go down. I really hope that this doesn't happen, but I want to warn you, because if it does, you're going to really want to call, and this is going to go back to that conversation we had. But if it does, we'll be right here, and right, we're going to pick up the phone. And you know, sometimes that actually happens, and most of the time it doesn't, but it does sometimes. It's just a little bit of seeding that says, I don't control the markets. It's not my job to control the markets. It is my job to do this other thing, which is to be here for you, right? We're gonna watch your transfers daily. We're gonna give you an update every week. It might take a couple of weeks for firms to let go of your money. Sometimes they really have a hard time with that, right? Setting an expectation that this is not gonna happen in 24 hours. Moving your life savings could be really scary. Please, we're going to reach out to you every Friday or every month. We're going to have a check-in with you, but please do not hesitate to call if you have any questions or concern in the process. The most important thing to us is that you have clarity and confidence about how we're working with you to create the financial future that's important to you. If you ever have any questions about that, I want to be your first phone call, right? You can say anything. You just have to integrate it into the message and the conversation, right? You're not just going to show up and say, thanks for being a client. Here's all this stuff. You're going to put in those engagement standards. You're going to explain the process to them, going back to those visuals or the stories that you tell. And then you're going to ultimately integrate them into your client service model. And these are just 3 visual variations. So here's some of the backgrounds. You guys have seen these in some of the sample libraries. Here's a visual version of that annual service calendar. You can make a version of this pretty and give it to clients. And then here is a pretty version. It's part of a client deliverable for one of our leaders' clients. So you see the nice timeline here that has the different things that are happening. And then they're checking off as they go through that onboarding process, the things that they're doing related to specific goals. They're using this on an ongoing basis in the service model to capture the things they're doing on an ongoing basis as well. But these are good examples of how you can define the internal services. That's the example in the right corner. Turn that into a service calendar, which you can then turn into a client-facing deliverable that says, here's all that stuff in a way that you can see and hear and appreciate in a story that makes sense to you. So that's the goal, is to take them through that process in a way that they really get that all of the things that you conveyed to them, who you are, what you do, your approach, your ability to help them achieve their goals is real, and they can count on you to do that. And we're creating a structure, the track that they can run on. We're creating the modules or the steps that we need to get them through. And third, most important and not least, is we're communicating that process. What does the engagement model look like? Here's how we're going to engage with you. Here's what you can expect. Here's how we're going to communicate to you. Here's what we expect from you. Here's about how long this process is going to take. Here's what the experience is going to be like. And here's the track that we're going to put you on. So does that help you all get a really good sense of what that funnel looks like, from how do I go from prospect process to building a bridge to that service model? There are four areas you're going to look at. People, very much like Felicity said, you're going to educate your staff on onboarding the goals and objectives. Watching this lesson is a really good way to do that. You're going to identify an onboarding manager. Andrew, in your firm, that is you. And that's okay, but we need to understand that onboarding is a project and a process that needs to be looked at. Your weekly client meeting spreadsheet, even though you're meeting with yourself, right? Or your CRM needs to have a list of those clients in onboarding, what phase they're in, so that you can track them. Those follow-ups are what govern that on an ongoing basis, right? So who's going to own the onboarding process? And then engage with your teams or your assistants, even if it's 5 hours of virtual, like what is it we're going to do to set up the systems and the structure and the steps to make this work? Adam can talk to you all day and twice on Sunday about putting the processes in place. We showed you, right, the internal visuals, the external client facing pieces, but also it's those workflows that go into those tech platforms that are going to automate those steps for you. So as always at Limitless, you are welcome to rip off and deploy those client onboarding resources, and then you're going to refine them to reflect your clients, your process, and the steps that you want to take them through. Adam talked about, what we talked about, the tech tools, Calendly, Tech Expander. So we've listed a number. What are the tech platforms and resources, your CRM, that you can use to standardize that onboarding experience? Email campaigns is one of the most underlooked places.
Yes.
Right. You can absolutely build an email campaign that says welcome. You can send an email campaign that says, this is what the process is going to look like. Here's a short video from us. Here's a visual of everything that you're going to need. So when you think about, you can't control the exact timing of when that paperwork's going to go through, but looking at those steps, you can build a storyboard of messaging. Hey, it's time for a 30-day review. Right, you can record that video. You can build a firm level video that really walks them through that process. So what you want to do is organize the factory work. Think about surges, think about systems. What are the things that are just structural and functional that you can put on a system and repeat, right? Build that workflow, automate that email, so that you're freed up, you and your staff, to deliver that specialized experience so that you can make that phone call and make sure that you're answering those questions and moving them through the process.
And remember, as you're thinking about what Stephanie's saying here, as you're asking yourself these questions, it's one thing to be on this call and to hear us share and everybody in the community share what's working for them, some accountability, et cetera. But through that filter of accountability, as you're thinking about where you're going to begin next, just please, I implore you, make sure that you carve out time on your calendar. What is the next best step in this process? What are you going to work on next? And when are you going to carve that out on a calendar? Because it's so easy to participate in a call like this and say, yes, these are things I'm going to do. And I write them down. And then they get tucked underneath the desk, right? All of this, everything that we're talking about here, the common denominator, the denominator in all of it is time management and project management. So what's that roadmap? And then who's going to do what by when? Manage that project. For Andrew, it might be, yes, him and himself. But as we were talking, I saw in chat there a little bit, this is a very easy project to delegate to a team or to delegate to someone in a contract basis. Here's what I'm solving for. Here's what I have. Here's what success looks like. And devote that to someone else. So block this out of when you're going to do that. I just want to emphasize that.
And Jeff, you made a really good point about perfect not being, right, what keeps you from making progress. Can you share that? Can you unmute? Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I assume that a lot of us are perfectionists here. And I think you, Steph, I mean, that was one of the biggest takeaways. I rewatched our one-on-one like 4 times, right? Because you talk fast like me, but also like, there was good stuff. But I think one of the biggest things was I have a big fear of putting something out there if it's not perfect, and I tinker and, you know, go over the spreadsheets and dial in math. And I think a lot of us are probably like that. And one of the biggest takeaways that helped me not get over that fear, but offset it with a better gain, was put out the MVP, put out the minimum viable product, and then use those upgrades, just like our software does, right? When we get it, it's annoying to have to reboot or update something. But when it says, but you're getting all of this every time as a touch, like that's the one thing that I think allowed my brain to offset the perfect at the beginning to, like, here's the reason, here's something better that we can do that allows for this to be okay with me. Does that make sense?
Does to me. What about for the rest of you? Because I think that's probably helpful for a lot of you. I know.
Well, when I look at Slido, this is, sorry, Stephen, in Slido, Eric had the question, any suggestions or ideas on how to go back to clients who may have been onboarded without a clear and laid out onboarding system? I mean, this is the same question, just phrased a little bit differently. What better way to go back to your client than to say, as I continue to look for ways to reinvent, evolve, and grow the way in which we deliver a great client experience, I realize that ... or I want to let you know that ... or we're introducing something.
Yeah, we know what's happening along the way, and we realize we can do a better job of letting you know what's happening. So here's what you can expect from us going.
Yep.
But I think very much to Jeff's point and this idea of perfect, when you think about this, because you're all working on different things right now, your brain is, do I check that big project that I'm working on? And I run over, like, that creates that conflict of where do I focus attention and priorities? Welcome to life as an entrepreneur and business owner. Our job is to sit in this space and ask ourselves, is this something I need to move on in a material way right now? Andrew, you might be like, I'm doing stuff that works pretty good. This is not a huge issue. There's some improvement I'd like to make. I'll put this on the list. No big deal. Is this something that you need to prioritize right now? Felicity, we might look at your priority set and say, right, the best way not to make money is not lose it. We really want to stop and fix the leaks here and get that pipeline working. Or you might be, Andrew, in a place of what I'll call MVP. And that MVP is, there are some things that I can take away from this call that I can implement pretty easily and quickly. I can sit down with the team, map out 90 days, draw a picture, write 4 emails and say, we're going to just start calling people on Friday. We don't have the emails. We don't have the CRM. Like, we're just going to open it up and call every Friday. Like, you can do that. If you can do that at a base level, or whatever your base is, just start there. Just say, hey, over the next 30 days or the next week, if it's a priority and you have the time, I just want to knock this little bit out, get a right base level in place so that it's good enough for now while I work on things that are more material. And then I can come back and move this to mastery over time, chunk by chunk, piece by piece, depending on where you are, right? So I like to start with the map and the internal ops and the team, and then ultimately, of course, work to the CRMs and the workflows. All right, so does it have to be perfect to be good, ladies and gentlemen? This is where you all unmute and do a resounding, right? Don't leave me hanging here. What's really important with onboarding is that you look at it through the lens of, have I done the real work? Have I answered the question, can I count on you? And that means I have to be able to answer the question of, right, what's the planning? What's the work process? What's the relationship process? What's that engagement process? How can I define that so that you as the client understand the expectation, and that me and or me and my team know what expectation we need to manage and deliver to, so that I can take the steps that I need to take to do that work and create a steady, sustainable system that we can reliably put clients through. Very much to Adam's point, you're always going to need to manage capacity. If you have a 5 client pipeline and you put 10 clients in it, it's going to break the system. For Felicity and anyone else in this situation, our job as we grow is to learn how to break things on purpose. To say we have a breakdown here, we need to recognize that. We need to give it its attention. And we need to figure out what we need to account for, because this is too impactful for the business. It's too big of an opportunity for us to not capitalize on. So wherever you are in that spectrum, this is an opportunity. And I hope that Adam and I and the conversation that we've had with you and each other has helped you to learn how to optimize your onboarding process in ways that are easier, effective, and more enjoyable for you and for the client, because that is pretty much what we're all about here at Limitless. All right, did this help you guys today? I saw a lot of really positive feedback in the chat. Allison has already posted, I think, the resources. We will process the video. You can play it on like half speed, which is what you have to do with Adam and I. We put 3 hours of conversation into a 90 minute call, man. You're getting more than you pay for.
One of the Kitsis office hour is either an off. No, it was one of his summits that I did. There was someone that actually put in the chat, what happened to my audio? Why is Adam on 1.25 speed? I'm like, oh, there is my sign. That is my sign. So I ever since that, I have tried to take mental note to just bring it down a notch.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I hope that you have found your mojo today, that you are ready to attack this Monday and the rest of the week with all of the awesomeness that is you. With that, go forth and remember to live a no limits life.
Have a great day. I'm going to go watch some airplanes. Have fun, everybody. Enjoy your day.